Today on Inside Utah Politics, the governor defending the top Senate Republican against claims that he abused his power to help his granddaughter.
I will say it's very fascinating to me that the very people calling for his resignation actually support the bill.
Why he's saying President Stuart Adams did nothing wrong. Plus, saving the Great Salt Lake, we're breaking down a new proposal focused on controlling the berm that divides the lake. Hear why some say it's simply not enough. Plus, President Trump's push for new congressional maps in Texas, now clearing its latest hurdle. Hear why this bill that's expected to pass could face legal challenges.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
And thank you for joining us today. Let's go inside Utah politics. Governor Spencer Cox is defending Utah Senate President Stuart Adams over a report that he spurred a law change that ended up benefiting his step-granddaughter, a sentence in a child rape case. Now, she was an 18-year-old who was facing charges for a sexual encounter with a 13-year-old. And the law change was acknowledged by attorneys during her plea deal. Now, Governor Cox says Adams did not act inappropriately by prompting that law change.
I don't think there are any facts in dispute. I think the facts are very clear. He talked to the Senate Majority Leader. The Senate Majority Leader took that information. He went into and he proposed a piece of legislation.
Well, Governor Cox went on to say that he didn't have any knowledge of that case when the law was being debated.
Found out about this case that you're referring to when I read the article. The Senate president never talked to me about this.
Now, joining me now to weigh in on this and other topics that are facing the Utah legislature, joined by State Senator Todd Weiler. Senator Weiler, good to be with you.
Good morning, Lindsay.
I know that you are not, I mean, you're technically in leadership. You're the parliamentarian, right? That puts you in leadership adjacent.
Fringe leadership.
Fringe leadership. Yeah, you're on the fringe of leadership. But you have been public in your defense of the Senate president as well. Tell me why you don't believe he did anything wrong in this situation.
So if he would have lobbied for a retroactive law, I think it would be a much different situation. And I know this looks bad. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. But for people that understand the process, if he had been transparent, if he would have told us all, I'm trying to help my granddaughter, my step-granddaughter with this policy, then it would have been much, much worse. Because then I and my colleagues would have felt pressure. Well, if we don't support this, then what does that mean? Is he going to retaliate against us? I'm not saying he would have. But the fact that he kept it confidential with Cullimore actually, I think, respected the process. I voted for the bill because I thought it was the right policy. I would vote for the bill again today, because I think it's the right policy that we teach, that we treat high school students the same, even though some of them are 17 and some of them have turned 18. And I think most of my colleagues would vote for the policy again today. I didn't know that this was going to have any impact on his granddaughter. I found out about his granddaughter a year later, before maybe the governor did, because I was running a bill last February that people accused me of running for the Senate president because of his granddaughter. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And that's when I started hearing whispers about that case. But that case was already over then.
Why should he have waited until after her sentence had come down to then change the law? Because I think if he had done that, it gets rid of the smoke here and the allegations that he acted inappropriately.
I think that's a fair argument. And let me just say, as a citizen legislature, most of the bills that I've run over the past 14 years, most of the bills that are run are because we know people who have experienced something, and sometimes that exposes a gap. So if either of us had a seam in our clothes split open, you'd want to close it. I think that this case, where his granddaughter was still in school, in high school, arrested in front of her friends, charged with a first-degree felony, which would have been 25 years in prison, this case exposed a gap. And just like if I had a gap in my clothing, I'd want to close the gap. I think this prompted Senator Adams, President Adams, to say, this is a policy that we should be looking at. And by the way, we have been trying to grapple with how do we deal with criminally charging teenagers having sex with each other. We've been trying to deal with this for over a decade, since in 2007, when the Supreme Court vacated a conviction when a 13-year-old girl has had sex with a 12-year-old boy, and they both were convicted of molesting each other. Ever since then, we've been trying to say, where do you draw these lines? This is ugly, and it's kind of disgusting to think about, but we have to draw those lines somewhere, and we're still trying to get that right.
The gender in this case seems to play a little bit of an issue, too, because this was a girl who had an inappropriate relationship with a 13-year-old boy. I asked this question of Governor Cox. I want to take a look at it and get your opinion, too. Take a look.
I found out about this case that you're referring to when I read the article. The Senate president never talked to me about this.
I actually want to get to the other clip where he talks about the policy here. Guys, can we play that other clip?
Would you support the policy if this was an 18-year-old boy who had had sex with a 13-year-old girl?
Yeah, so again, that's a very interesting part of this whole discussion, right, is that nobody knew that was the case. And I've asked myself that question, too. I don't think it should matter. But for some reason, everybody I talk to, it does.
So did that matter for you? I mean, did the legislature want to pass this law to protect 18-year-old boys from having sex with 13-year-old girls? And then this was a way for them to say, oh, well, this is a girl. We're protecting this girl who shouldn't be charged this way.
Yeah, so first of all, I'm a lawyer myself. Legally, the gender doesn't matter. And when we debated the bill, we didn't know about the charges pending against the granddaughter, step-granddaughter, and so we didn't really debate it in a gender standpoint. The way we debated it was, if you and your best friend are a senior in high school and she turns 17 2 months before you do, are you developmentally different? And most experts would say no. You're the same. And so for me, when someone graduates from high school, we throw them parties, we send out invitations, people give them money, because we're recognizing it's a rite of passage into adulthood. So for me, it seemed like, let's treat all high school seniors the same, and then once they graduate, we'll switch then to adult.
But where
penalties.
Does that line stop? Why could you say the same thing about a 16-year-old who has sex with a 13-year-old?
We have drawn those lines, but let me tell you this. A high school teacher, if they are a history teacher, I'm going to make up a hypothetical. If they have a student who turns 18 in October of their senior year, that teacher cannot have sex with the 18-year-old. Why? Because the law understands, yes, this person's an adult, but they're still in high school. So we treat it differently if the high school student is the victim from a teacher who's in a position of trust, and it makes sense to me to flip that coin and treat them the same if they're considered the perpetrator as well.
Do you think the legislature will tackle this at all in this special session? There's been some chatter behind the scenes among politicos that the legislature may repeal this provision.
This will not be addressed in the special session. It may be addressed in the general session next year, but I would vote for the same policy again, and I think that this policy will survive. And by the way, Arizona does the same thing. Arizona treats an 18-year-old in high school, when it comes to these teen sex laws, a little bit differently than they treat an 18-year-old after they've graduated.
But you know it will not be on the special session.
I will be shocked if it's on the special session.
We will leave it there, Senator Todd Weiler. I want to get to another topic before we end our time here today. You were the chair of the Judiciary Committee, both interim and the Senate Judiciary Committee, during the general session. There is a bill that will make it on the special session, and that is to have the governor appoint the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Right now, the justices pick among themselves. Got to get advice and consent from the Senate, and the term is for 8 years, and justices can only serve as Chief Justice for one term. That is different than the law that was vetoed back in January, in the early part, or March rather, in the early part of the year. Just explain to me why this change is needed, because all the chatter I've just heard is, oh, well, we want to speed up the court process. We want more rulings to come out. But why is the legislature making this change?
I don't know that the change is needed. I do know that the Utah Constitution says that the legislature gets to decide the process, and they've never.
So why are
really
you deciding it?
I think it's before us, but let me just remind your listeners that the President of the United States and the governors of 13 other states get to choose the Chief Justice. We would become the 14th state. There's only 22 states, including Utah, so there'll be 21 that let the judges decide. In some states, like South Dakota, all of the judges in the state elect the Supreme Court Chief Justice, and so there is no, like, gold standard brand, but I actually like the way that they do it on the federal level. This will be a little bit different, but we will be in a clear... we will not be an outlier at all if we make this change. But right. I do think it's the legislature saying we want to have more of a say into the Chief Justice position.
And that's the quiet part out loud, right? The legislature wants more.
I'm not afraid to admit that.
Okay.
This is not the most important bill in the state right now, but I think it's completely within the legislature's discretion and authority, and I don't think it's a bad thing.
And you think they want this say because they don't like the rulings that have come out over the past year?
Well, I think that there's some legitimate concern that our Supreme Court is releasing the smallest number of opinions of any Supreme Court in the country, and they would like a Chief Justice, you know, who is, by the way, an administrator. We clarified in the hearing this week, the Chief Justice doesn't get to tell the other four judges how to rule. They don't get to decide what cases are heard, but they are the administrator, and they do report back to the legislature in a speech every year. So we want them, I think, we'd like to see the workload increase.
Republican State Senator Todd Weiler, thanks for joining me today.
Thank
I appreciate
you,
your time. And coming up here on Inside Utah Politics, the latest push to save the Great Salt Lake. We'll explain a new proposal and why some say more needs to be done. Stay with us. Welcome back to Inside Utah Politics. The latest push to save the Great Salt Lake is on. Lawmakers in an upcoming potential special session will address raising the berm. This is the causeway that splits the north from the south arm of the Great Salt Lake, and there's a lot of opinions on whether this is the right move to help the Great Salt Lake at this time. So joining me to explain it all, the commissioner, the so-called Great Salt Lake Czar, Commissioner Brian Steed. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you for being here. How do you like the title of Czar, by the way?
You know, I'll tell you, my daughter loves to be called Czarina.
Okay, perfect. Whatever dad's title
exactly.
is, we'll take it.
Yeah.
All right, so this proposed bill sets a certain trigger level for when the berm of the Great Salt Lake can be raised in order to allow more water from the north arm to flow to the south arm. Tell me the benefits of doing that, why the Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Land needs this flexibility,
sure.
in your
so,
opinion.
So for a number of years, the Great Salt Lake has been divided really into two halves. We have the north arm, which is really salty, and we have the south arm where the fresh water flows in. And so what we've been trying to do over time is to keep the south arm as healthy as possible to make sure those salinity levels are good for brine shrimp and brine flies and all the other ecosystem benefits that we have. Since about 3 years ago, we've been managing the causeway berm, and that's just for some history. The railroad put a full causeway across the lake. It divides the lake into two.
It's basically a divider.
Exactly.
Yep.
And then we have breached that, and there's water that actually flows from south to north, because all the fresh water flows into the south, and then it spills to the north.
Which is hard, because you think about rivers flowing from the north to south, and you're like, wait, that's backwards.
It does make it confusing. The issue is, though, that when we have the south arm get to low lake levels, we generally see salinity spike. When that salinity spikes, it becomes unhealthy for brine shrimp, it becomes unhealthy for brine flies, and that means it's unhealthy for birds and other things that consume those. And so what we try to do is keep the levels high enough in the south arm so that we have lower salinity levels. We've been doing that for a number of years, we've had great success, and so even though right now the Great Salt Lake's not in great shape, we have lower lake levels than we'd like to see. The lake is approaching where we were in those 2021, 2022 years that were really bad. And so we would normally see the salinity way high. It's not, because we've been managing it that way. This action, as confusing as that all is, helps us to manage that salinity level and helps us to keep it at a healthy range. And so I would argue it is necessary, and it's actually provided some benefit.
You have faced some accusations from, granted, some environmental groups who are accusing you of, or at least the legislature, you by default being hired by them,
sure.
Of wanting to dry up the north arm of the Great Salt Lake. I can't imagine that's the goal, but please explain.
No, so the real intent is not to do that. We are, in fact, mandated to manage the lake as a whole, but we do have this weird artifact of history that it is divided in two by that Union Pacific Causeway. So we're trying to manage the ecosystem benefits of the south arm, and that really does require some active management. And that's what we're trying to do here. And this proposed piece of legislation, what it does is provide Forestry, Fire, and State Lands more flexibility to decide when they bring it up and when they bring it down.
But they argue that there's no express provision in this proposed legislation that doesn't allow it to stay that way permanently. So is that going to get fixed?
I think when you look at the legislation, there is provision to say that the forestry fire has to come up with a plan to lower it in 18 months.
They say that's also, stricken. Is that struck?
No, I think that's still in the bill.
Okay.
And I would also say if you look at the people that are really around the lake and those legislators, we've got Senator Sandel, we've got Speaker Mike Schultz, both of which have huge concerns about the North Arm remaining in a relatively healthy state. That being said, we need to make sure that we're doing both, that we have great ecosystem health in the South Arm and we have sufficient water in the North Arm. And that requires a bit of a balancing act, and this allows for that balancing to occur.
If we were going to address the Great Salt Lake in the special session, is this the bill that you would choose to run? What is the, like, is there a silver bullet for the Great Salt Lake?
So first, there is not a silver bullet for Great Salt Lake. It's going to require all of us to work together to get it right. I mean, we have treated this lake for a long time as if it's always going to be there and if it's always going to be healthy. And reality is, our choices, how we use water, do make a difference.
And so how do you change that? Because one of the big issues here is the water that flows in, it's being diverted upstream. How do you stop the upstream diversions?
So I think first of all, we got to look at what we can do, right, personally. And I think that, I live in a city, I live in Logan, and how I water my lawn actually does directly impact how much water can get to the Great Salt Lake on a collective level.
But at some point, it's not changing anything.
So I would disagree. Okay. I mean, I think if you look at 2022, you really did see people sit up and take notice, and we saw a bunch of action. We're trending back into that same drought pattern, and I would argue, we all rolled out the signs that said brown's the new green or yellow's the new green, however we phrased it, and making sure that people understand that is, a really positive thing. The other thing I would just say is this. We have invested a lot with our farmers and ranchers, and I get a sense from farmers and ranchers that they really are concerned about having a healthy Great Salt Lake. They don't want to be blamed for being a cause of decline in the lake, and I think that we're working together with them to make sure that we get beneficial solutions for both.
Yeah, and I'm not accusing them, and just hear me, that I'm not accusing them of taking all the water, but they are a big water user because they grow crops, mm-hmm. and we need some of those crops. But I guess this is sort of where the politics of the Great Salt Lake comes in. What should the legislature require, and what should they not, given the dire need of the lake to fix?
So I think it's an excellent question. I mean, I think that having more management tools is beneficial, right? I do support this legislation because I do think that management of the causeway berm has provided better outcomes on the lake. I mean, I've seen that in the time that I've been commissioner. In addition to that, I'd love to see more measures helping incentivize conservation. That has proven to be effective. Right now, almost all of our provisions are voluntary, meaning that, we have had huge changes in legislation over the last 3 to 5 years that deal with how we get more in-stream flow into the lake, as well as how we make sure that farmers and ranchers can be compensated. So we really do need A, resources to do that, and B, we just need to be working together and make sure that everyone understands that it's us, all of us, that can make this difference.
Do you have a top 10 list of things that could change right now that you would like, tell the lawmakers what you would like them to do right now?
So the first is to pay attention to the lake levels. A low lake is not healthy for Utah.
I know there's been some pushback on setting a target level. What is the pushback there?
So I think there's concern that, you set an arbitrary number. This is a terminal saline lake, which means that it's completely dependent on how much water flows in, and those levels go up and those levels go down. And it's been very dynamic over history, and people are a little worried to say, okay, well, great, we set it at this number. What we have done, though, is said, hey, we know what healthy looks like. Healthy is at 4,198 feet above sea level to 4,205. Those numbers have been in effect since 2013. And if you look at the Great Salt Lake Strategic Plan, the legislature asked me to put up, that's the number we're shooting for. So I would argue that that's not really true that there's not a target elevation. What I would also argue is that more water getting to the lake is beneficial. And so anything we can do to get more water to the lake is also beneficial. And so rather than prescribe certain steps for the legislature, I just would invite them all to work with us and work with their constituents to make sure we can find solutions that are win-win in getting more water to the lake.
Is there anything you're losing sleep over right now that we're not addressing?
I would say I lose sleep all the time over the Great Salt Lake because it's a very hard thing. As you mentioned, there's politics behind this, and because people care. And people care passionately about water usage, but they also care about being able to make it and grow crops. And they worry about, you know, the various other human values that we have around the lake, and we've got to balance those out. And that's what makes the job hard, but it also is what makes the job fun.
Brian Steed, the Great Salt Lake Commissioner. I call him the czar. I think the title's good, by the way. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Coming up on Inside Utah Politics, new maps favoring Texas Republicans. The Trump-backed move is now in the Senate. Hear the heated exchange between lawmakers coming up.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ahrens.
The Republican bill in Texas that redraws the state's congressional maps is one step closer to becoming law. The Texas State Senate is set to vote on the bill that redraws the district lines in a way intended to help Republicans pick up more seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. Now, congressional maps are usually redrawn once a decade to reflect changes in population from the latest census, but President Trump has asked Texas to take this up now, ahead of next year's midterm elections. Now, Republicans hold a narrow three-seat majority in the House. Democratic lawmakers in Texas fled the state for 2 weeks to delay the vote on this bill, then brought their protest to the Capitol floor ahead of that vote.
These maps are deepening the struggle for communities of color that will only worsen because one small man in D.C. demanded it.
You own the walkout. You said you did that. But don't come into this body and say we didn't include you. You left us for 18 days, and that's wrong.
Now, if this becomes law, the new Texas congressional maps are likely to face legal challenges. Democrats allege Republicans targeted communities of color, which is illegal. But Republicans reject that, saying they redrew the maps to create a political advantage, which is legal. Well, that's going to do it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure to reach out. You can always email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. I'm also on social media, so follow along, won't you? X, Blue Sky, Threads, Twitter. Oh, that is X. Lindsay on Air on Instagram as well. You can just search for us there. Our show is also online in podcast form, so just search for Inside Utah Politics anywhere you get your podcasts. And ABC4 is on social media. You can follow along anywhere you are. While you're at it, you can download our News for Utah Plus app. Just pull up your camera right there and scan that QR code. Well, thanks for being with us, everyone. We will see you next week.